Good morning, Mr. Strom. Thank you for that. Good morning, everyone else. Welcome to the Thursday, April 22nd, 2021 meeting of the Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online as linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them. And for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they're attached in the calendar event that you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hands via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Ms. Sunderland, would you please call the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damuth.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt is excused. Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Zhang.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
And that is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland. Representative Feist, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from Thursday, April 8th? And if so, would you like to move approval of those minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have reviewed those minutes, and I so move those minutes.
Excellent. Any discussion to the Feist amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor of this Feist motion approving the minutes of Thursday, April 8th, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Feist. Members, today we're going to hear the provisions in House File 600, the Cannabis Omnibus Bill, that relate to education. Members, the sections are listed on your agenda. We'll be discussing those provisions and hearing public testimony relating to those provisions. We did not receive any amendments yesterday. Our intention is to vote to refer this bill, to the Public Safety Committee by 9:25 a.m. Are there any questions about our agenda today? Okay. Representative Jordan, would you like to make a motion to move House File 600 to be before the committee with a recommendation it be referred to the Public Safety Committee?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the Education Finance Committee, Mr. Majority Leader. You've got the floor. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you particularly for being here bright and early after a long night last night in the middle of a long week with a lot of late nights. I appreciate your time and attention to this important issue. House File 600 creates a system for cannabis regulation, legalization, and criminal expungement. It seeks to right many of the past wrongs that have been caused by a war on drugs that has been based on false information related to the dangers of cannabis, in part, and has unfortunately led to the over-policing and over-targeting of certain communities in Minnesota, particularly communities of color. Minnesotans use cannabis. About 680,000 Minnesotans use it every year, or at least try it. Students across the nation report that cannabis is currently easily or very easily available to them. We have a cannabis system that does not work. The goal of this bill not only is to address racial injustice and criminal justice reform, it is also to better educate children about the actual dangers of cannabis, better control the cannabis marketplace, so that rather than having an illicit marketplace in which children and adults have an illegal distribution network that has many dangers, we can create a system in which every bit of cannabis is tracked from seed to final sale. We can ban marketing practices that are designed to appeal to children. We can make sure that our workplaces have the right regulations and the proper safety approaches to cannabis, and that we can make sure that Minnesotans are able to use a substance for their health and for their personal use based on actual information, based on knowing what the product contains, and based on a system that is far less harmful than the current prohibition model that we have today. So Mr. Chair, members, I don't need to go into great depth about other provisions of the bill. I will just say that we are here in part because we know that youth access is a concern for cannabis. We want to make sure that youth are properly educated, and we ask the Department of Education to develop standards for it. I also want to say that we prohibit in this bill cannabis in business operations near schools. We prohibit cannabis consumption by youth up to the age of 21. And nothing changes with respect to the fact that employees of schools who work with children or who have collective bargaining agreements still can be prohibited from having cannabis in their system. This bill is designed to create a better system for regulation and restricting access to cannabis, particularly for youth. And Mr. Chair and members, I think this bill is a model for how we can better regulate a product whose regulation to date has been a failure and in many ways caused more harms than the product itself.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Leader. Members, you have quite a number of items in your packet. The research summary you have is an engrossment behind the current version of the bill. Mr. Johnson, if you're on the call, would you be able to just explain to members the last amendment that I understand was added in the previous committee and how it falls into this committee's area?
Mr. Chair, Ben Johnson with House Research.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, there was an amendment. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, there was an amendment at a recent stop, and the bill summary has not yet been updated to the most recent engrossment. For this committee's jurisdiction, the key section that did get changed appears in Article 7, Section 3, Subdivision 3, that deals with parental review of the education materials related to cannabis use and substance use. That section, that subdivision changed slightly. It specifically requires school districts and charter schools to allow the parents, guardians, and adult students to review the content of the instructional materials on cannabis use and substance use. It also requires the district and charter schools to allow parents and guardians and adult students to opt out of the instruction with no academic or other penalty for the student. And it requires the school districts and charter schools to give notice of the right. Mr. Chair, that's the only change at the last stop that's relevant to this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate the update. So members, just a reminder that the articles and sections that are within the education area are Article 1, Sections 4, 8, 14, 46, and 47, Article 5, Sections 5 and 9, and Article 7, Sections 3, 4, 5, and 14. Members of the public have also been noticed that those are the relevant sections for this committee hearing and have been asked to both limit their comments to those sections and also limit their comments to 2 minutes each. For members of the public who've signed up to testify today, in the chat, you will see when there is 1 minute left in your time, and then 30 seconds. And I just ask that testifiers do in fact keep their comments within the 2 minute time limit. I have a list, a fairly lengthy list. So with that, I'll start with Andrea Jones, please. Ms. Jones, please introduce yourself to the committee and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm Andrea Jones. I'm a St. Paul constituent. I have three children in the K through 12 public school system in St. Paul, and I am in support of this bill. I think that legalizing and decriminalizing cannabis in Minnesota is not just showing our ability to be with the times and support what is not only going to bring increased revenue for what could be earmarked for school systems, but also address racial injustice that has been obviously prevalent here and needs to be acted on and continue to be moved forward. As a parent, I believe in being able to educate our children, and Republican Ryan Winkler, I really appreciated your summary. The fact that I personally remember what it was like to be in driver's ed some years ago. I grew up in Virginia, and learning about the dangers of drinking and driving and learning about what alcohol does to the body. And I think that having a well-regulated and legal market that provides education for not just the prevention of substance use, but allows to have a very candid conversation about what does happen, how is it impaired, and I'm really in support of this bill. So I hope that you guys hear me, and I know it's a pleasure to be able to kick off the conversation.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. Next, Susan Nickleby, School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Dabney and committee. I am Sue Nuckleby, the past president of the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota and a member of the Legislative Committee. I want to thank Representative Winkler for listening to the licensed school nurse concerns and taking them to heart. We appreciate his commitment to health and safety of Minnesota students through safe licensed school nurse practice.
Thank you, Ms. Nuckleby. Next is Jasmine Bolden. Ms. Bolden, please state your name for the record. Welcome to the committee. Proceed with your testimony.
Hello, I am Jasmine Bolden. I am a middle school teacher at Community of Peace Academy in St. Paul, Minnesota. Some of the reasons I really am for this bill are for educational purposes for our students. Students are able to have open and honest conversations about alcohol and how that works with their body, or about sex or many other things, but they're not able to talk about marijuana and how it actually impacts them. And so being able to find a way to incorporate that into the school so that students can use it safely would be very huge for our students, as well as I want to definitely see the decriminalization and see that move, I guess, away from the impacts that it's had on the Black community. I am biracial, and I grew up on the east side of St. Paul, and I've seen the way the over-policing has really impacted the Black community. We know that a lot of people smoke weed. Just seeing the way that it's almost used as another excuse to arrest a person of color is really sad to see, and it would really change those outcomes in the way that our system has sadly become.
Thank you, Ms. Bolden. Members, please note Representative Thompson has joined us. Thank you, Representative Thompson. Next on the list of testifiers, Mr. Aaron Zimmerman, President of the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals from Perham. Principal Zimmerman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for having me. My name is Aaron Zimmerman, high school principal here at Perham High School, and also the president of MASSP, the Secondary Principals Association of this year. So on behalf of the MASSP Association on there, as well as for principals on there, when we look at these things, first and foremost, I think bringing this forward is important, and the education that it would provide for students is absolutely critical. Along with that, how it may affect society as a whole and how it affects our state, I think is always something that we're looking at without a doubt in our schools and through the principalship eyes. One portion that they would ask to take a look at on there is many times in education as we're educating students to be careful that it's not also infringing on other people's beliefs or who they are as a person. So anytime there's anytime there's conversations of the session of providing the legalization of the cannabis in regards to the state of Minnesota, there's always that trickle down effect of how it might affect our schools. And there's many different beliefs on that. So on behalf of the principalship on there, first and foremost, school safety is on the top of our list annually on there. But would look to how that might, the education, how that might affect this bill, how that might affect the education of students. Always going to look at how we can help support students in educating what's out there, but then how's that going to affect our public schools may be a concern as well. So thank you for having me on here, and thanks for introducing this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Next on the list, Ms. Christy Pierce. Ms. Pierce, welcome to the committee. As you've seen, please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, I'm Christy Pierce. I'm a youth worker and an educator for more than 30 years in St. Paul, working at St. Paul High School. And I think it's, you know, I'm a storyteller, and I'm trying to keep it quick. I work with many, many, many kids who use cannabis as a way just to get through the day, get through life. And I think it's critical for us to be able to have resources. We used to at one point have chemical dependency worker counselors in schools, and now we don't. So when a kid comes to school high, you know, you talk about public safety, the nurse, you know, looks at their eyes, sees if they look to be under the influence, and then we send them home. So they're driving high, they're walking high, they're riding the school bus. You know, we have no resources. We have school social workers. The whole chemical dependency state of mind is very different than just social emotional, which is what we tend to work with. So as a technical solution, you know, we talk about putting money into education, putting funding, and the money never seems to really get to the direct services of the kids. We have no Rule 25s. We have no way to evaluate, you know, how heavy use, how heavy our kids are using. Is it just, you know, cannabis? Is it opioids? We know it's opioids. You know, weed is a gateway for many of our kids to getting higher and higher and higher, because they're living in such traumatic lifestyles right now. So I love the fact that this is on the table. We have to stop criminalizing. We have to interrupt, you know, the school to prison pipeline. We have to give our kids and families more and stop taking away, because they have less right now. So I think, you know, I'm totally in support of legalizing, you know, cannabis. It seems so small. Like, why are we even talking about this when there's so many greater things in the world that are harming our kids and our lifestyles and our communities. So thank you for whoever introduced this. I don't do all this political legal stuff. I do kids and families and communities. So thank you all for, you know, taking the time to address what, or listen to us who are in, you know, boots on the ground is the big word, the buzzwords. And our boots are on the ground, and our kids and our families and our communities are dying, and the life is being sucked out of them. And it's not just opioids. It's, you know, it's so much. So I'm babbling, rambling. We need chemical dependency workers in schools. We need resources for families and communities.
Thank you, Ms. Pierce. And thank you for doing kids and families and communities.
Thank you.
We'll try to hold down the politics. How's that?
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Next on the list, Kim Lewis from the Minnesota School Boards Association.
Good morning, Chair Dabney, committee members, Representative Winkler. My name is Kimberly Lewis. I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent all 333 of the locally elected school boards across Minnesota. Today, I'm also speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators and the associations representing the elementary and secondary school principals of Minnesota. Our membership really appreciates Representative Winkler bringing this to education. We would love to continue to weigh in on this, and appreciate your thoughtfulness in the way the bill was written and including us in the education of the students and making that a priority. However, we do still have significant concerns relating to cannabis or medical marijuana possession and the use of it on or near school property. We understand and appreciate the delicate balance that legality and patient outcomes have to play. However, we'd be remiss if we didn't understand that it is still in violation of federal law. Even if students are registered medical marijuana patients, schools are still prohibited from having a controlled substance on our school grounds. The federal government bans the possession or use of all illegal drugs, including state legal medical cannabis, within 1,000 feet of any school. Any school district that chooses to allow their students to possess cannabis or medical marijuana is violating that law, and it could potentially lead to the elimination of federal funds. And when we look at the federal funds that have come in this past year for COVID, et cetera, the risk of losing those funds is just simply too great at this point. Without an indemnification from the state, from our schools, and the reimbursement of any lost federal funds, our membership just cannot support the legislation at this time. In addition to the financial implications, there isn't an employment component to this for our schools. Our licensed school nurses, if asked to administer cannabis to students, would be putting their licenses in jeopardy and thus creating a staffing concern for us in the districts. We are more than grateful for the opportunity for education to weigh in on this. And because the scope of this bill is so complex, we would love to see a task force or working group that would include more of the education folks, special education, parents, students, administrators, other groups to sit down and really understand the potential issues and protections of bringing cannabis into the schools via education or having the students be more aware of it. So Mr. Chair and
thank you, Ms. Lewis. Winkler,
we appreciate your time.
Thank you. Next, Rory O'Brien, the Minneapolis Students for Sensible Drug Policy Leadership. Mr. O'Brien, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Rory O'Brien. I'm the chapter leader of Minneapolis Students for Sensible Drug Policy and the Digital Communications Coordinator for Students for Sensible Drug Policy Global. SSDP is the largest global youth-led network dedicated to addressing the war on drugs through sensible policy change with over 370 chapters across the globe. And I also studied addiction counseling at Minneapolis College. Reflecting on my drug education as a teen, a major consequence of abstinence education is that youth are not equipped with the knowledge that they need to make informed decisions. This is especially dangerous in an unregulated, unpredictable black market. I had multiple friends who experimented with synthetic cannabinoids, also known as K2R spice, often incorrectly described as fake weed due to prohibition. They experienced adverse effects that resulted in or nearly resulted in seeking emergency medical attention. In classes, we were not educated about synthetic cannabinoids nor how it differs from cannabis. And because the education was so focused on abstinence, the only way to find out was through experimenting yourself. Both SSDP and the Drug Policy Alliance have developed harm reduction, evidence-based drug education curriculum. SSDP's Just Say No, K-N-O-W, is for college students. It involves peer-to-peer education, and our lessons on cannabis includes information on the history, what drug use looks like across cultures, including the impact of the war on drugs, how cannabis works in the body and its effects, and how to reduce the harm if people decide to use cannabis. DPA created the first program of its kind for high school students. A key concept is that the safest path is to avoid drug use, to provide scientifically accurate, honest, and compassionate lessons. Both Minneapolis SSDP and SSDP Global endorse and support House File 600 and the bill's commitment to cannabis education, including for youth. A primary way to mitigate the risks with youth and cannabis is through education, and the only path to mitigate the harm that cannabis prohibition has caused in the school to prison pipeline, destroying families and communities of color, is to fully legalize and regulate cannabis for adult use. We look forward to working with the state leaders to give youth and all people the knowledge they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Brien. Next on the list, Dr. George Romuto from the University of Minnesota. Doctor, please state your name for the record. Welcome to the committee. Proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chairperson Dodney and committee members. I am Dr. George Realmuto, a child and adolescent psychiatrist and professor emeritus of psychiatry at the University of Minnesota. And for a dozen years, I was the medical director at the State Psychiatric Hospital for Children in Wilmer, Minnesota. In my experience, toxins and brain insults, such as fetal alcohol exposure, lead ingestion, traumatic brain injuries, and marijuana, are related to educational failure, behavioral mental health, and addiction disorders due to the toxins' effect on the developing brain. States with recreational marijuana have increased use of marijuana in elementary and high school students. Marijuana use is associated with adverse academic consequences, including increased high school dropout rates. Marijuana affects the central nervous system of developing brains. Young developing brains are especially susceptible to the negative effects of marijuana use, and young users show changes in gray matter volume that affect cognitive processes like attention and motivation. It has been shown that in states with recreational marijuana, there is a large increase in marijuana use by pregnant women. And the children affected by marijuana use in pregnancy, when followed into middle school, showed negative cognitive, behavioral, emotional, and mental health effects. Marijuana also has negative academic effects in college students. Finally, a study from the University of Minnesota Institute of Child Development published this month showed in their extensive twin registry, when they controlled for genetic environmental differences, cannabis use may impair academic functioning during the secondary school years with downstream effects on their careers and livelihood. Education, prevention, and early intervention are necessary to be put in place prior to commercialization of marijuana. And the bill fails to account for these harms, nor sufficiently funds mitigation. And the age of use should be changed to age 25 to prevent the toxin effects on the brain. Thank you.
Chair Demi, you're muted.
How did that happen? Thank you, Dr. Elmudo. Next on the list, Cynthia Gomez. Ms. Gomez, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Ms. Gomez, you're muted.
I'm glad you put me after the professor. Very glad. Good morning. My name is Cynthia Gomez. I've been an educator for over 30 years. I'm in my seventh year at PYC Arts and Technology High School in North Minneapolis. Whatever we put in our bodies, we must do in the context of love for ourselves. That's what I tell my youth. I can only have those sorts of critical conversations with them because I tell them the truth. A crucial part of a young person's education that we don't really think about is around the choices they're going to make about their relationship to these consciousness-altering substances that they'll be exposed to, including alcohol, the role those things will and won't play in their lives, the understanding that people have used such substances since there have been humans. The lack of fact-based drug education is an overarching problem. It's a positive danger to youth when drug education is dispensed through a just say no approach, with no attempt made to give students accurate information about the specific properties of different substances. It's important to understand the toxicity of alcohol and the addictiveness of opioids. The horse is out of the barn. The widespread use of cannabis among teenagers is not something easily reversed, and I'm certain that continued prohibition has done and will do nothing to reverse it. I'm not advocating that teens use marijuana. I'm just saying what's real. If we tell young people that cannabis is deadly and harmful when they know for a fact that it is neither, what happens when they encounter Xanax, cocaine, crack, opioids, Adderall? Cannabis is a gateway drug to the degree that we don't tell our children the truth and fail to arm them with the information they need to make wise choices. The misclassification and mischaracterization of cannabis has done nothing to curtail its use, and at worst, has had the effect of putting students in the deadly danger. If they don't tell me the truth about weed, maybe they didn't tell me the truth about blank either. The war on drugs has devastated communities like North Minneapolis. We have 40,000 incarcerated nationwide. Hundreds of thousands of more return to their communities as convicted felons. Children suffer terribly when their loved ones are caught up in this web of criminalization and incarceration. Prohibition has, of course, also criminalized many youth, which is such a pernicious thing, making everything that much more challenging and barrier down the line. And I want to say also, I have two students in the last few years who have had a single encounter with K2 that adulterated cannabis product and have permanent seizure disorders. The availability of these adulterated products is one of the consequences of an unregulated black market. The legalization of cannabis would kill K2 and it would save children's lives. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. Next on the list, Beth Gendler. Ms. Gendler, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Winkler. My name is Beth Gendler. I live in Minneapolis, just a few blocks from Bryn Mawr and Anwaton schools. My husband and I have three kids. Our oldest is about to graduate from college in New York. Our middle is a junior in college in Iowa, and our baby's a freshman at Minneapolis Southwest High School. She was thrilled to have her first day of in-person school last Monday. She told me it was great, but really hard to find her way around. And while she was looking for her math class, she found the bathroom in the basement where, in her words, the kids vape and do their drugs. She was mostly baiting her nervous and overprotective mama, but it's also true. So you might be wondering why a nervous mom is testifying today in support of this bill that would legalize adult use cannabis. It's because I think it will actually make our kids much safer. First, if cannabis is regulated, when kids get access to it, more of the products out there will be safer. I know that regulation and equity issues aren't the topic of this morning's hearing, but these issues all intersect, and I want to name that. I'm equally enthusiastic about the provisions of this bill that call for research and evaluation, which will give us a baseline understanding of youth cannabis use in Minnesota and an opportunity to measure and evaluate any change that results from adult use legalization. That will give you all the information that you need to make any changes that are deemed necessary as a result. When this bill passes, our kids will benefit from education based on model programs and developed with input from parents, educators, and students themselves. They'll learn about the adverse effects of cannabis use for children and be equipped to make smart choices. I wish that my son had benefited from this education when he was in Minnesota public schools. Adult use cannabis is now legal in New York State. He's 22 and a pretty smart kid, but I don't know if he knows everything he needs to know. And I'm pretty sure that the articles and cautionary tales that I text him are not real effective education tools for him. Finally, I'm pleased that this bill ensures that children who need medical cannabis have access to the treatment that they need when they need it, even during the school day. This bill protects the health and well-being of kids who rely on medical cannabis to make it through their day and enhances their ability to learn and do the work that they need to do to be successful in school. It also protects their caregivers and school personnel. Thanks for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Gendler. Next on the list, Lori Nakamura. Ms. Nakamura, please state your name for the record. Welcome to the committee. Proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Lori Nakamura. I'm a licensed school nurse for a public school district in the Twin Cities in St. Paul. I want to thank the committee and the committee chair for this time. I've been working as a licensed school nurse for 16 years. 15 of those years have been in the secondary setting or the high school setting. The use of banned substances by students is a reality. Unfortunately, my role in dealing with the use of banned substances is primarily punitive. The student is typically seen by an administrator and sent home. I am greatly frustrated by the total lack of any meaningful resources, education, and guidance, and follow-up for the students and their families. There is nothing available. Exclusion and punishment is not working. It leads to dishonesty, fear, and disengagement. What would it look like if any revenue generated from the bill would be funneled into development of education and resources that deal with substance use, issues around dependency, and options and alternatives? I don't have specifics, but changing our lens from punishment and exclusion to restoration and support is a first and important step. Thank you to the committee and the committee chair again for this time.
Thank you, Ms. Nakamura. Last individual on the list that I have is Leili Fatehi. Ms. Fatehi with Minnesotans for Responsible Marijuana Regulation. Please welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Leili Fatehi and I am the campaign manager for Minnesotans for Responsible Marijuana Regulation. We're a statewide multipartisan campaign organized by leaders from state and local government, a broad range of nonprofit organizations, Minnesota's business community, organized labor, and more. I'm on the agenda today because I was going to read to you testimony that was prepared by a public school teacher who is currently undergoing cancer treatment and using cannabis as part of her treatment to treat pain related to her cancer. She wanted to offer her testimony anonymously because of her fear that it could jeopardize her job or otherwise her standing with her school's administration to testify today. Unfortunately, she must have had something else come up and was not able to send me her written testimony in time, but I wanted to still appear before you to let you know that she wasn't the only educator that reached out saying that they wanted to testify today in support of HF 600, but had concerns or fears about doing so. These were educators, most of them public school teachers, that wanted to testify, like many of the testifiers today have, about the ways in which our existing cannabis policies aren't adequate to protect our kids from underage substance use and from the use of cannabis. I know that members of this committee value the perspective and the opinions of our educators on what they see as working or not working for our students as they're interacting with them, and that you likely share my concerns now, knowing that there are many additional teachers that have a perspective in support of this bill, but have felt uncomfortable testifying to that effect. So I just wanted to let you know that we are working on helping those educators to communicate their perspectives to you in a manner in which they are comfortable. So you can expect from us in the coming days, either some kind of written anonymous testimony or other outreach from some of these educators that we were not able to make accommodations for today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fatahi. Members, that concludes the previously scheduled testimony, a mix of testifiers. Now, member questions. Representative Bennett, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have a couple questions. I guess these would probably be for the bill author. I've just kind of been taking notes as I went along. So my first question, and I did hear one of our testifiers speak to it as well, and maybe that person, it was doctor, and I can't remember who, but we do know that cannabis, marijuana, whatever we're calling it here, affects the development of the brain. And as one of the testifiers said, and I've heard this before too, we know that the brain is not fully developed till around age 25. And just curious as to why, I mean, I understand age 21 in the bill is probably to keep it the same as tobacco and alcohol, but we do know that there is a very big effect on brain development. So I just would like to hear from the bill author as to why not 25? That it concerns me a lot that we're going to have young people whose brains are permanently affected by these developmental issues.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bennett for your question. I think, first of all, I would agree with you, and I do agree with you, and I think evidence suggests that cannabis use in youth can have an adverse effect on brain development. So I want to fully agree with that. The reason 21 was chosen is simply because while there are effects up to the age of 25, it is consistent with how we treat alcohol and tobacco now for legal age purposes. I do want to, and I know you didn't exactly ask this question, but the testifier you mentioned talked about increases in youth use as a result of legalization. And I'm happy to send this these to the committee. But the Substance Abuse Journal concludes that there is no increase there's no evidence of any increase among use of adolescents as a result of legalization. It's the same conclusion reached by the Preventive Medicine Reports of 2021, Addictive Behaviors Journal of 2021. The Journal of Adolescent Health concludes that legalization does not lead to increased use. The list goes on and on. The American Journal of Public Health concluded in 2020 that adolescent marijuana prevalence has varied little across the country as states have legalized. Continuing down, the Journal of Studies of Alcohol and Drugs reached that conclusion. The National Survey on Drug Use and Health from the U.S. Department of Health, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the American Journal of Drugs and Alcohol Abuse. The list goes on and on and on of research and studies that have shown that legalization does not lead to increased use. And I say that not to minimize the importance of the issue, but to say that as a policy issue, if we look at how we're approaching cannabis, shifting to even states who did poorly, California did a bad job of legalizing cannabis. Colorado stumbled early, but even in states that did it poorly when they started, they haven't seen increased youth use. So those concerns are real. The age of 21 is consistent with alcohol and tobacco. And there is zero evidence based on every major study that has looked at youth access and use post-legalization to be concerned that we're going to have more kids trying cannabis as a result of legalization. So I don't want to be, you know, that's not exactly the question you asked, but I did want to address the testimony of Dr. Realmuto.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Representative Bennett, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, and I do have another question, and it actually has to do with what Representative Winkler just brought up. And I understand there are many studies showing that youth increase doesn't go up, but there are also many studies that do show that, and it's very mixed. And I have a hard time trusting either side on the data I'm getting because it's so politicized, which is unfortunate. And so it is difficult to know, but to me, common sense says that if you see your parents lighting up, which is going to happen more often when it's legalized, it's going to become more acceptable and youth will use it more. And again, I've seen studies showing both and they're all good studies. There are studies too that show that accidental ingestion by young children are go up as well as a result. And, you know, because, and so one of my questions actually has to do with, I'll get away from the debate of whether use goes up or not. That concerns me because I do believe mental health issues, which are already a big issue in our schools, the need for social workers and mental health workers. I feel like this bill should have more funding than for those because I believe the need for that will go up as a result of this. But my question has to do with this accidental ingestion that we're seeing, and it's mostly from the canned marijuana or THC-laced things, edibles that look like Skittles, look like cookies. And it is evident that that goes up, and that concerns me that things like that will go into school. So is there anything in this bill that allows or doesn't allow the use of THC in things like candy items and cookies and that kind of thing that are much more, would you say, that children would be much more likely to eat?
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, yes. So first of all, let me say that the kinds of gummy bears and other sorts of candy-related items that you described were initially not prohibited in the state of Colorado. And some of the information that we've heard about that has come out of early experiences in the state of Colorado. Colorado learned from that lesson and began to prohibit those kinds of products that are appealing to youth. And as a result, those kinds of accidental ingestion has gone way down. And in our bill, we prohibit any kind of marketing or product that would be appealing to children. And so you can't have gummy bears, you can't have bright colors, you can't have marketing with cartoons and that sort of thing. And no cannabis product is legal in Minnesota unless it is approved by the Cannabis Management Board, which this bill creates. So we establish a board appointed by the governor, and one of the charges to the Cannabis Management Board is to prevent youth access to cannabis. And so not only do we prohibit it in the law, we also give it as a mission to the Cannabis Management Board to not approve anything that will be appealing to children.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Winkler.
All right. Any other questions from members? Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Chair. I was just doing a little Googling while we're starting our committee, and I found kind of an interesting piece in Wikipedia. And I just thought I'd mention that because I really don't know the answer, but it seems to be found in this little bit of information. It says a normal message here. It basically says that if a larger amount is ingested for cannabis, the effects are much longer. Normal, smoking or something like that is maybe gone within about 3 hours. But if you have ingested, let's say you're doing your special brownies or special cookies, they can still be in your system 24 hours to a few days afterwards. And I'm just wondering, for people that have to, go to the work in the morning, and school bus drivers, and you name it, police officers, firemen, how is that going to be protected that these folks don't go to work accidentally high and still be able to protect the public? I mean, that really concerns me that this could be happening. So I didn't read the entire bill, but is that in the bill, Representative Winkler?
Representative Winkler, the portions of the bill that touch on testing, some of the portions are within the jurisdiction of this committee. Care to respond to Representative Daniels?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Daniels, very good question. So I touched on this briefly, but currently, employers can fire a person for any reason or no reason unless they're part of a protected class. That is true of state law. So employers could decide if they wanted to terminate a person because they arrived at work in some way impaired. If you have a federal regulation like in transportation prohibiting cannabis, then you can do random testing. And if there's any amount of cannabis detected in the person's test, then they can be terminated or disciplined pursuant to whatever policy the employer has in place. That is also true if you work in a safety sensitive position. So for example, high tech manufacturing or driving heavy equipment. It is true if you are working with children, including bus drivers and educators. The employer can essentially have a zero tolerance policy and random testing for people who do any of those jobs. So that would not change. The only places where it would change is if you are not in one of the categories that relate to safety sensitive, working with children, law enforcement, et cetera. So if you're any of the things that you've described, a zero cannabis policy is acceptable under this law for the employers to have in place.
Representative Daniels?
Yeah, just one quick follow-up. And I appreciate your answer, Representative Winkler. I'm not sure if it can actually be done to keep safety number one, but I worked at the Northern Tool and Equipment in Faribault here, manufacturing plant, and I worked there for 17 years, and safety is always number one. Our CO always came down and said, what job is worth dying for? And made the very clear point that safety is number one. Well, these people work on the assembly line in a manner where if you were impaired, you could get severely injured. So I won't ask a question, but my comment would be, I just think this opens up a whole new realm of safety hazards. And that's my concern, is whether it be a driver or a person on a manufacturing line or somebody in a tool and die place where these machines don't know if you're high or not. So that's my concern, and I'll leave it at that. I think this needs a lot more discussion before we, you know, move that bill ahead anymore. But I do thank you for bringing it forward.
Other questions from members? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so 9:25, so I have 26 minutes of alone conversations with the majority leader, is that correct?
I've got it at 27, but yes.
I thank you. And I apologize, my camera's not working. So Representative Winkler, I did want to make this a face-to-face, but so let me start off this way. This is coming through the Education Committee, and this and the jurisdiction of our committee is around education. And I want to confine my remarks to that as much as I can. Representative Winkler, thank you for bringing this forward. One of the things that I do believe the legislature needs to do more of is thoughtful deliberations and debates on policy. That's what we're supposed to do. Many times we allow issues and emotions to enter that realm. But at the end of the day, I think that the people that I serve with and that I have served with over my tenure here enjoy policy debate and discussions because that's what we're supposed to do. That doesn't mean that agreement or disagreement should be the goal. I think the goal should be to get to the best policy we can. So when I look at this and Representative Winkler and members, I'm sure everybody's done their research and knowing Representative Winkler's past, he's well-versed in the research and has done his homework. When I looked at the research, and as I've looked at this over the course of my tenure, particularly in the child protection and other areas, I concur in one area, and that is in the states that have gone through legalization of cannabis, there usually is very little variability on outcomes. In fact, what seems to be consistent in the research, it doesn't matter where you've looked, where I've looked, both sides tend to overstate their positions and to fall into to rhetoric to try to get to their arguments. But when we actually look at the numbers and the research that I've looked at, we overstate the positions on both sides. That doesn't make up for the fact, though, that as I look at this and I look in the jurisdiction of this committee, the question that I ask as it comes through education finance, and if I was in public safety, maybe I'd have a different close, but how does this improve the solutions and problems that we have in front of us, the learning loss, the academic disparities, the breakdown of the families that need resources so desperately. And if this policy were to go through and have very little effect on that one way or the other, or to wobble the variability on either side of those, that doesn't help me get to the solutions that I'm trying to work so hard for in education. So while I see this can be moving through in other policy areas and maybe in public safety and incarceration, there's a case to be made there. But in education, the fact that a large part of this bill has to go to resources that we anticipate later down the road will become an issue as they become the longitudinal part of studies tells me that there will be outcomes that we're going to have to deal with. One of the other things that this bill reminds me is anything we do at the legislature, we'll have to go through the imperfections of regulatory system, bureaucrats, rulemaking, and so forth. I can think of a couple of examples, and I'll take a little bit of a tangent just to make an analogy, but we just got done debating the e-pull tabs, a situation where we thought we had an ironclad agreement, but then when it went through the imperfections of bureaucracy and so forth, latitudes happened, things occurred, and now we're having to put the toothpaste back in the tube that we can never do. The same thing will happen here. We're still dealing with human beings that suffer from biological chronic inebriations that are stuck as a chemical experiment every day when they wake up. And we're still dealing with kids that are going to go into areas that we wish they wouldn't. And we're dealing with companies that love to use capitalistic means to increase their bottom line and their profitability. All of that will occur, and all of those mechanisms will be applied to cannabis. And those are the things that we're going to be doing. This is, Representative Winkler, you're having the policy discussion, but let's not make any, let's not make any false assumptions. This is the beginning of dealing with something that we already are dealing with and trying to solve. I don't think that we are going to solve any of the educational problems we've been trying to solve by legalizing cannabis, but it's an important conversation, and we need to talk about how that is going to affect education. My last closing remark on this, and obviously as an education finance, I can't support this bill and wouldn't recommend that. But I think about, even though we say there's very little variability, even though that there appears to be little change in addiction rates, and we're still waiting to see exactly what happens in the child protection and maltreatment as more and more families get access to this and how they respond with their kids. But the one piece that is stuck with me, and this is a recent thing that just happened in our community, and we all have those. We had a young lady here, 25, who recently passed away of a drug overdose. And that happened because there was a bad batch of heroin that has come through our communities, and heroin has been replacing methamphetamines and opioids because we've been cracking down on the opioid prescriptions. And so we have these children who are susceptible to this, and it was a very difficult situation, a tough home life. But even though there's no change, there's very little change in what cannabis would do, a very small change here was a life that was lost. And I understand there are lives at stake when we look at the public safety side and the incarceration, but that doesn't change. There's also lives on the other side. And we're in the business of trying to save lives. We're in the business of trying to make kids more successful in education. And if at the very least the agreement here is this won't have that much of a change, then that means it's really not improving the educational problems we have. So for that reason, I would not support this. But again, Representative Winkler, I like to debate policy, and I like to talk about how we can make things better, but we are staring down a situation where things aren't getting better in all aspects and in lots of aspects. And that's hard for me to accept as a parent, a father, someday, hopefully a future grandparent, and a former education. I always want the world to be better than the world I left. So thank you, Representative Winkler.
Representative Winkler, your response, sir.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kreshaw, well, there was a lot in that statement. And I want to express my appreciation for acknowledging that we don't see a lot of change in youth use. And I think it is important to try to start from that foundation. And I would agree with you that if we don't see major changes in youth use as a result of legalization, then in that sense, we aren't creating a good case for legalizing. But you have to look at the effect of the overall policy. So in Minnesota today, African Americans and white Minnesotans use cannabis at about the same rate. And as I mentioned, 680,000 Minnesotans try cannabis every year. Okay, the fact is that anywhere from you are 10 times more likely to be arrested for possession of cannabis if you are a Black Minnesotan, okay? Think about what that means. Felonies last forever. Felonies disrupt the ability to get jobs. Felonies disrupt the ability to pass background checks. Felonies disrupt the ability to get housing. And look at where the communities are located. Look at who the people are who get most of these criminal records. That doesn't help the next generation. That doesn't help children to have whole communities that have been targeted for enforcement under the current prohibition model. So if you look at a child as part of an overall community, part of an overall family, ending prohibition actually allows more families to have more resources to be successful without causing harm for youth access or youth use of cannabis. So if you weigh the balance, we are doing more harm than good with our current prohibition model. ending prohibition of cannabis, moving to a legal regulated marketplace with education for students, for adolescents, for youth, so that they understand and are given honest information about how cannabis works, what dangers other drugs may pose. All of that is a better overall system for the children of the state of Minnesota than what we have right now. And we do dedicate resources from the taxation of cannabis to cannabis use disorder to make sure that we have more counselors, more mental health, more substance abuse treatment available. The goal with taxation of cannabis is not to create a revenue bonanza for the state. It is to make cannabis actually pay for the harms it causes in our society and pay for its own regulation. We aren't close to doing that right now. We can do so much better. And the level of attention and thoughtfulness that so many members of the House, so many advocates, so many organizations have put into this bill, make it ready now for passage. We will do better with this bill than we would without it. And I would just add that with states around us legalizing, the era when we can even plausibly say that prohibition will have any effect on the availability of cannabis in Minnesota is way behind us. We need to get the laws right and actually deal with the reality that we face now. And that's why we're bringing this bill forward. And I think that will be good for kids.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. With that, Representative Jordan renews her motion that House File 600 be recommended to pass and sent off to the Public Safety Committee. Ms. Sunderland, would you please take the roll?
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry, who's asking for
recognition? Mr. Chair, Drazkowski.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I had my hand up, but I'm not sure.
I think that's a no, but Representative Drazkowski, we would have called on you earlier. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Representative Winkler and my observations on this issue. Of course, some people struggle with the idea that we have laws already for people to follow around the use or non-use of cannabis and struggle with the implementation and carrying out of those laws. They don't like the results. They don't like, the interaction between enforcement and the laws. I understand that, and I understand that as a motivation to do this. But the discussion earlier about the ingestible materials for children, I guess the first question I would have is, do we have gummy bears in Minnesota now laced with this stuff?
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, they are illegal, I'm guessing this is where you're going, and I'm sure they probably exist. The goal with this bill is to end the illicit marketplace and shift to a legal regulated marketplace. And I hope that this makes you feel like I'm saying something you like. If we have the regulatory burden be too high or taxes be too high, we will make it more difficult to create a legal regulated marketplace for cannabis. That is why we have taxation relatively low. That's why we've constructed the regulatory system that we have so that we can more easily migrate from an illicit marketplace to a legal regulated marketplace. And under that system, the goal is for the distribution of cannabis through illegal activity to be much harder and to be better policed.
Representative Drazkowski, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Winkler. But as you probably expect, Representative Winkler, my trust in government to be able to solve this or additional government employees to be able to somehow counsel people in their approach to life is much, much more limited than the idea of people actually following the laws that are laid out, yay or nay. But my question really was, do we have gummy bears in Minnesota now? I mean, this ingestible stuff for kids, we've got prohibition. I suspect this stuff is flying into some of our schools now with prohibition. So if in your discussion earlier, if around concerns for kids in the future under this bill, you say, well, gummy bears are going to be prohibited. How is prohibition then going to be effective if it's not effective now? It's back to the same argument. If prohibition isn't working for cannabis generally, how is the false notion of having prohibition of gummy bears under this bill going to somehow properly placate our concern, those of us that are concerned, I think probably all of us are, about the gummy bears?
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Drozdowski, because it isn't just all or nothing. By allowing a expansive marketplace for a legal product in which businesses can make money selling it under a regulated system, they will get most of the business or all of the business, and they will have to follow the rules. That's the advantage of doing it this way. If they don't follow the rules, then they won't be able to continue. On top of that, if most of the cannabis marketplace is legal and you can't get gummy bears, it's unlikely that there will be a budding entrepreneurial system just to create cannabis gummy bears for kids in Minnesota. The marketplace won't be there. There won't be enough demand for it. The demand will be in the regulated marketplace. It's the same reason why prohibition for alcohol was a failure, because it tried to get rid of all alcohol. Regulated alcohol works, and we don't have a huge illegal marketplace for alcohol, despite the restrictions, which many people find to be overly some right now.
Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Winkler. I just think, as some of the other members have discussed before, that there's concerns with the inertia, if you will, that may come along with this being legalized, that will bring the gummy bears in anyway. It's like water flowing down the river and pulling in the tributaries. I struggle with that, and I don't see how the reassurances with, well, we're going to prohibit gummy bears, but we're going to allow this other stuff, is really going to work. And I know, you know, your trust in government again is high, mine is low. And I think experience tells us that the government's regulation is not necessarily going to change people's behavior. It's a tough issue. I thank you for bringing the bill, and I thank you for the discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Winkler, any final comments?
Mr. Chair, members, I just appreciate your time. The last thing I would say is something like 2/3 of Americans and Minnesotans believe in legalization. And if we continue with a criminal justice approach in which we are not properly regulating and we are criminalizing people for a product that most people think should be legal, we are undermining confidence in our overall system of criminal justice, system of government, and we only make things worse. So it's time to move forward. It's time to move forward thoughtfully and carefully, and that's what this bill represents. We don't have a choice but to move forward, because the world is changing around us. We want to get ahead of it and get this done right. That's what this bill represents, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. With that, Representative Jordan renews her motion that House File 600 be referred to the Public Safety Committee. With that, Ms. Sunderland, would you please take the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Pass.
Representative Kreisha.
No.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Daniels.
No.
Representative Damuth.
Damuth votes no.
Representative Drozdowski.
No.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Jordan.
Jordan, aye.
Representative Marquardt is excused. Representative Mueller.
Pass.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, aye.
Representative Wolgamott.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Joachim.
Aye.
The roll call vote yields eight.
Ms. Sunderland, do you want to call Representative Sandstead and Representative Mueller again?
My apologies, correct.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Sandstead.
Pass.
We are recording a pass for Vice Chair Sandstead. And Representative Marcourt, we have excused. Representative Mueller.
Pass.
We're recording a pass for Representative Mueller. So with the two passes and excused, we yield a vote of 8 ayes and 6 noes.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland. With that, members, the motion prevails. Representative Winkler, how many committees have you been to with this bill?
Mr. Chair, I am not a cannabis user, but I have lost count of how many committees I have been to. I don't know how many I am going to yet.
Well, next stop, public safety. With that, members, we are anticipating at least one more hearing before the conclusion of this legislative session. So keep an eye on your email for that. Thank you to everyone who got up early this morning, and maybe a particular shout out to all the members who, as the majority leader indicated, we were up late last night passing some good public safety legislation. Thank you for this morning's deliberations. With that, we are adjourned.